You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. All right, have you gotten your recovery check? Was it downloaded automatically into your bank account? Well, imagine if you don't have a bank or a bank account. That slows things down and ends up costing you more than you might realize, especially when it comes to a lot of people who are underbanked in this country. It has got the attention of Amaya Pawar, along with Congresswoman Newman and Schakowsky. They have an op-ed piece in the Tribune today. Amaya, welcome to WGN.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so tell me about this problem. How significant is it?
So to put this into perspective, there are about 80 million Americans that are unbanked or underbanked. And so unbanked, obviously, is pretty obvious. They don't have access to basic checking or savings. Underbanked are folks that may have access to checking or savings but rely on alternative services like check cashers or payday loans to make ends meet, all of which leads to this widespread, this massive system of economic predation, where you have vast swaths of America spending more to access their money per year than they do on food.
So if I don't have a bank, I get the recovery check, the $1,400. What does it cost me to cash that check typically?
You're going to pay anywhere between 3 to 5% at a currency exchange to cash that check. And so you know, there's no risk for the currency exchange, right? I mean, it's a government check. It's not going to bounce. So they're carving off 3 to 5% off of the top just for giving you access to your own money. Then for a lot of people who don't have banks, they also have to pay their utility bills. So they go back to the currency exchange and they're paying 1 or 2% of every single one of their utility bills. Again, just to make their payments, they're paying a currency exchange. Just to cash their check, they're paying up to 5% in fees. That doesn't even include for the folks who now qualify for the child tax credit, who lose between 13 and 25% of their tax refund just to file their taxes. I can go on and on, but I mean, yeah, you can see how this all adds up.
Well, I know you've been working on this idea of a public bank for a while now, and there's a bill in the House. Frankly, Amara, I did not know too much about it until I started reading this. Let's start with the post office. You think the post office should start offering banking?
Well, I think the operative word is restart. So the U.S. Post Office used to offer basic checking and savings and bill payment and money order operations until 1967. In fact, they still offer money orders, and when they're one of the largest providers, billions of dollars a year in money orders. But this is something they provided until 1967.
Yeah, I was going to get there, but let's explain that for me. So you're saying up till 1967, I could have had a checking account with my local post office?
Yeah, absolutely. And to think about it this way, there are more post office branches than Bank of America or Wells Fargo combined. So every community's got a post office. And so you could go down to the post office, mail your bills, collect your letters, and do your basic banking services all for free. It is an incredible convenience and would put billions of dollars back into the pockets of working people across the country.
Okay, I'm thick-headed, so I'm going to ask you this one more time because I just can't believe it, that I could have had, say, 1965, I would have a checkbook that would say the U.S. Post Office as far as the bank?
Yeah, the post office was the local bank.
I had no idea.
The thing is it wasn't national, and that's why I think they started, so the banking lobby worked extremely hard while the post office operated a bank to make sure that, you know, if you had a post office bank account on the branch at Irving Park in Southport, that you couldn't then also go use the branch at Lawrence, on Lawrence just west of Western. So they worked really hard to prevent that. And I think as banks pushed for deregulation in the 70s and beyond, they weren't allowed to do that either. So they wanted to make sure that you could do branch banking across the country. And they worked really hard to make sure the post office could never do it.
And what was the demise of the post office bank?
Yeah, pretty much.
My bank isn't for free. I pay fees. I would imagine the post office, under your scenario, would pay some or would charge some fees as well, or require minimum balances, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt that it costs money to provide banking services, and that whether it's a public bank or a private bank, there would be some fees somewhere. The question we have to ask ourselves is, does it make sense that this many Americans, 80 million Americans, are losing billions of dollars that could be going to small businesses, for products into savings to buy homes, to pay rent and medical bills, and flowing to a few really extractive and predatory industries. So, yeah, I think you would pay, you know, there'd be fees for, sure, you know, for some things, but it doesn't have to be predatory.
And so there's the post office bank, but you also advocate for a more a public bank where that, what, a city would set up, a state government would set up?
The reason why I think public banks at the state and local level are really important is that everyday people and small businesses need banks to conduct their affairs. But there's a secondary thing that people need to realize about what banks actually do. There's good debt and bad debt. Bad debt is payday loans. It doesn't create new wealth. But when banks, commercial banks, lend money to people and businesses to buy a home or to expand their businesses, they create new money. And that new money, when it multiplies in a community, creates wealth. And it shouldn't come to a surprise to many people that the places that are struggling the most in America are also places that don't have banks. And so what happens is those communities lose out on that money creation, that wealth creation that you get when you finance businesses and homes. That just doesn't exist in rural and urban communities. And so what you need is a gap filler. That's all I'm suggesting is really like if private banks don't want to serve big chunks of America, public banks can and should.
I can hear my audience saying that how in God's name can I trust Illinois state government with my money? I mean, how do you reassure them that everything would be okay?
Well, I think it's important to zoom out for just 1 second to understand that, you know, banks have plenty of their own scandals. Wells Fargo just paid billions of dollars because they were creating fake accounts. Goldman Sachs just settled a massive case with the federal government. Banks, public people, private people, you know, there's scandal in every arena because human beings operate in both arenas. And so the fear of someone making a mistake should not outweigh, you know, the benefits of serving everyone equitably. And, you know, most of the world, there are public banks. The biggest public bank in the world is the Japan Post Bank, which is a postal service. These exist in the most advanced economies of the world. It's just in the United States we've taken a very negative view on public banking, and a lot of that is due to the public to the private bank lobby.
We're talking to Ameya Pawar. He's a former Chicago alderman, but also a fellow with the Open Society Foundations and the Economic Security Project. What are the chances?
So, you know, there's about 24 or 25 really robust public banking organizing movements across the country. Furthest along is New York and California, and so there's New Mexico. The governor of New Jersey is supportive of a public bank. So this is an issue that was once seemed as too radical and too big that has really changed over the last couple of years. Postal banking has a number of sponsors, from Senator Gillibrand to Senator Sanders, and it's a bipartisan coalition. So there is a lot of movement in finding solutions to banking the unbanked. Because I think what people are starting to finally realize is the racial wealth gap, the fact that this many people are being left behind by the current economy, none of that can be solved without having access to a real banking system. And the private banks don't want to serve lots of people.
We're going to talk about it a little bit later, but the commissioner of the IRS was before the Senate Banking Committee today and talked about how there's about, when you consider the very wealthy and corporations, about $1 trillion a year in taxes that is owed that goes uncollected. And when you consider that, and then you think of a person, you know, who's paying $20 to cash a $150 check, it's just the situation should be fixed.
Yeah, I mean, you just see you're exactly right. Look at that. You spotlighted an issue, which is, you know, we have concierge-level services for people with money. They can hire tax accountants and lawyers to evade taxes, to lobby Congress, to prevent paying taxes. But when it comes to serving average working people in urban and rural communities who just really want to cash their check and not be ripped off, they've got massive barriers in place. And so this is really just pragmatic. It's not even progressive in any way. It's just pragmatic.
Ameya Pawar, listen, it was good to talk to you again. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Chicago's Afternoon News here on 720 WGN. We're going to head into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.